Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, it's time to Fast Forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Presented by Oricon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Steve Glenn. Happiness to the year 3000. Not much has changed, but there is underwater. And your great, great, great granddaughter is divine. Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. The future of almost everything. That's what we do Thursdays on the upswing. Martin Moore, our regular guest, is out today, but we have a wonderful substitute, stand-in, amazing guest back at WTMJ, Andy Nelson. Milwaukee Andy from the PR firm and marketing firm The Glowland sits in for Martin today. Steve Glenn here, as always. Two wonderful community and business voices, thankful to have their expertise. We're going to talk about cash incentives from automakers, what Kia is doing to kind of build its share in the EV market. We'll look at technology that's out there to slow down your car. We'll talk about tech talent in the Milwaukee area, the economics of dining out alone. Maybe talk about a really interesting story I saw about Jeff Bezos buying a home in Miami and how it could relate to what's happening here in Milwaukee. And then at the end of the show, we will talk Dining Out for Life, a big event happening today and tonight with Vivint Health. But first, as we do each and every morning on the upswing, let's go two up.
Up one, two. Now it's time for the
2
up on the upswing.
There's lines all over Greater Milwaukee, and not just because of the new Raising Cane's. Will there be new lines at the new Quick Trip? The new Quick Trip in Heartland opens today, right up there in Highway 83 and Capitol Drive. That it's a big development spot, new housing and much, much more out there. A brand new Quick Trip, 12,000 square foot space, including a dual bay car wash. Plus, obviously, the gas station, the store itself, it's a larger footprint than normal. So it's probably not your typical Quick Trip. New aesthetics, kind of a new look and feel as well. According to JS Online, today is the soft opening. The official grand opening with all those specials that Quick Trip does is September 16th, followed by the big ribbon cutting on September 24th. Personally, I love the pork and veggie egg rolls. They're still a favorite of mine for sure. I think they're still only $2.99, which is great. But I'm seeing gas at $2.85 a gallon, and GasBuddy.com reporting this morning $2.72 per gallon at the Quick Trip in Lisbon, Wisconsin. Good gas prices for sure. Let's take our cars from Quick Trip to Lambeau Field on Sunday. The Green Bay Press Gazette had a wonderful analysis of parking in and around Lambeau Field for this Sunday. But first, let's look at ticket prices for the Colts and Packers on Sunday. Verified resale off of Ticketmaster via Packers.com. You can get a ticket in Section 103, Row 47, for only $110. Section 120, Row 14, $376. So, going to be beautiful weather on Sunday. You want to see the Packers and the Colts? You can get in Lambeau for $110. Not a bad deal. But what about parking? The stadium has a capacity of 81,400, which means about 20,000 vehicles need parking on game day, right? The Packers have said no available spaces in lots of their own. The team charges $50 to park in the Lambeau lots. What's your strategy? Maybe it's the same as mine. I get there early. I walk a little farther. I look for that free street parking. There's a ton of it available in and around Lambeau, kind of just north of Lombardi Avenue. There's some good spots. But if you look at the lawns in the neighborhoods, some quick prices. On Valley View Road and Blue Ridge Drive West, you got prices from about $25 to $30, $20, $40 along St. Agnes Drive, Shadow Drive, Frank Street, Thorndale Street, $30. So you're going to look, if you're not going to the official Packers
lot for $50, you're probably going to find parking between $20 and $40, which isn't that bad. But again, I always say take the shuttle, find street parking, and just walk to the game. It's pretty enjoyable that way. Have your cheese head on. Go, Pat, go. All right, that's two up. When we come back, the future of almost everything. Steve Glenn, Andy Nelson join. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. The WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. This story from the Wall Street Journal today, and I wanted to ask Steve and Andy, just there's a lot of new dynamics in the housing market for sure, and probably none of us are playing at the Jeff Bezos level, but let me just give you this story and then get your thoughts on home selling process and kind of who, when you're looking to sell a home, do you want to work with your realtor to really know who's going to buy your home so that, like, there's good caretaking and moving on to the next generation? So he didn't realize Jeff Bezos was buying his $79 million Indian Creek home. Now he's suing. So a guy named Leo Chris believes that Douglas Elliman, which is a national brokerage company, should be on the hook for the $6 million discount he gave to the buyer of his Miami house before he knew it was billionaire Jeff Bezos. So the seller of this $79 million home is suing the brokerage company that handled the transaction, saying the company misled him about the identity of the buyer and would cost him $6 million in the process because he gave a discount to it, thinking he was selling it to somebody else who was coming into the neighborhood. Bezos already owns two homes in the area, and now is buying a third. So the guy's like, wow, if I would have known it was Jeff Bezos, I could have made a whole lot more money selling my home. So he's suing the company for $6 million, believing he forfeited, not realizing Bezos was the buyer. I don't know. When you put a house up for sale, you're working with your broker. Do you, are you one that's like, hey, I want to make sure that who's buying this is best for the home, or is it all about the money?
Money.
Money. Easy.
Money.
Done. Steve.
I think it depends.
I don't want good people moving into the home I'm selling in my neighborhood, but for me, it is definitely the money factor. Like, yeah. I want to maximize whatever I put into that house on the outtake.
Yeah. And I think that's the case in this lawsuit too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you list a home for what you want to get out of it, and it doesn't matter who the buyer is. You want to maximize that value, without a doubt.
Yeah. Now that said, I know Andy, you were just talking about an experience you just went through, but like when we bought our current house, we definitely wrote the sappy letter of the family moving in and families coming together and all that stuff to make the deal happen. We weren't asking for discounts, though.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I think it depends. If Jeff Bezos, I want that money.
Right.
we're talking millions of dollars. But I think in actuality, like, you're often talking about razor-thin margins where there's, you know, in terms of, like, the average person buying a home. And I think, you know, who isn't in real estate these days? I feel like I know so many friends that have gotten into that world. And I think oftentimes it doesn't matter, but I think sometimes it does matter. And for me personally, if we're talking about very similar prices, I would care. You know, your home is a personal thing, and knowing someone's story of why that place means more to them than another person, that would definitely impact me.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. And, you know, there's a lot of transparency in the real estate process for sure. But there's privacy if you're working with a broker as well. So, but I like that strategy. If you're looking to buy a home, you know, writing that letter, hey, yeah, this is my family. This is a home we really enjoy. If you intend to put your home on the market, we would like to explore that.
What was this guy's name that didn't sell it again? What was his name?
Leo Chris.
Leo Chris. This is going to be like the Leo Chris world.
Yes.
That name is like, you can remember that name.
He is the co-founder of a Brazilian toy and electronics company.
So he's doing fine.
Yeah, he's going to be all right.
He's got a $79 million home.
Yeah. So let's talk cash incentives to change auto loyalty. The new story from Kia is Kia is really looking to get a bigger slice of the EV market. And if you want to get into a Kia and you currently own a Tesla, they're saying there's $1,500 cash for you to make that change to Kia. No matter what you're driving, you have brand loyalty to your car. And if there's a cash incentive from another maker, does that sway you?
It definitely perks my attention.
Yeah.
And I'm in this process right now.
Okay.
And I'm at the end of it, I think, because I made my decision ultimately not on loyalty to the car brand, but to the person that sold me the car I have today, who's just awesome. So yeah. Loyalty to people.
Loyalty to, you know, the customer service and the support that you're getting to put you into the vehicle that you want.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. What about you, Andy?
I feel like I'm in a different place. I technically have like half a car. It's a 2006 Scion XB. It's on its last leg. So my wife and I really share our car. It's our 2022 Hyundai Tucson. So, you know, I rarely drive. You know, that's why I live in a city. I mean, after my 2006 Scion XB, rest in peace, that's my girl. I have her for 15 years, but I'll probably get a scooter or something like that. So as far as brand loyalty, it's kind of a little bit different with my wife and I of kind of figuring out, you know, really what is best for us. And I don't think we don't have any loyalty to Hyundai.
Yeah.
But in terms of these like cash incentives, the whole market, especially like the EV market, is constantly changing every day. So, yeah, a little bit here or there could pique my interest for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and they're also offering 0% APR for 72 months. So, you know, if you look at, hey, I want to get into the right car with not a big down payment and then 0% interest, you know what? I'm going to take a look at that.
And at the same time, though, I think, you know, just thinking of when we were purchasing our car, at the end of the day, you know, $1,500, $2,000, like, I want the right car.
Yes.
I want something that I like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, 2 years later, am I going to regret because they knocked off $1,500?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cars, would technology that tells you you're speeding stop you from speeding? When we come back, we'll talk about what California is looking at and could it work here in Greater Milwaukee. This is The Upswing, the future of almost everything. You are listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Steve Glenn and Andy Nelson today.
What?
Let's keep it on technology and cars.
Yeah, let's do it.
Right? Yeah. So road safety advocates are calling for, this is California, a pretty fairly simple fix to speeding. Onboard technology that can warn lead-footed drivers to slow down. So the approach got a pretty big boost at the end of August when lawmakers in California passed a bill to require speed warnings on new vehicles starting in 2030. A Democrat who's the bill's sponsor said the number of people dying in crashes is a state and national crisis. Obviously, you know, across the state and here in Metro Milwaukee, some speeding and reckless driving concerns for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, do we think a system that can actively block drivers from speeding is that a non-starter?
Does it literally block, or does it just tell you you're speeding?
It warns you you're speeding. It's not going to stop the car.
That's not going to stop the speeders.
No.
Not one bit.
No.
I might be the only person on this panel that has lost its license because I had so many speeding tickets.
Okay.
That was 18, so that was more than 20 years ago. But that definitely helped me stop speeding.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. I do like going back to our previous segment. My Hyundai Tucson. I do like that it has like the speed limit sign there. Where, like, it always tells me what
the speed limit is.
Yeah. I feel like that does help me sort of subconsciously kind of try to stick around that. But I don't know. This might be a little bit of a bridge too far. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, you know, there's people that would say, hey, it's my risk. If I want to get a ticket, that's my decision. don't put that on my car to try to corral it for me. But at the same time, I mean, to your point, Andy, when the speed limit is shown in front of you and it shows you where you're going, you'd like to think that you take that approach to slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of extra cost to the car manufacturer. But here in Milwaukee, we've really kind of put a lot of the streets on road diets to kind of soften that traffic and make the drivers slow down naturally. So I think from a city perspective, that's a really good use of funds, and it's already having really good impact around the area.
Yeah, people are driving too fast, just consistently everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking like from old guy, get off my lawn perspective. Like, it's just dangerous in some spots.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, let's see. Let's switch to tech talent. I talked yesterday with the Business Journal's Rich Kirchen, but studies like this one this week showing the Milwaukee market ranking 49th, down from 48th last year in demand for technology job talent, they kind of worry me. Like, I know studies are studies, and you look at the population base, we're probably going to fall in that 30 to 50 range no matter what. But looking at tech talent growth kind of stagnant in the area, what can we do about that, Steve?
So I get fired up on this question for a number of reasons.
And I would think so.
Yeah, so tech, innately tech goes up and down and sideways and different. I mean, now AI is what everyone is talking about. So how do you have a consistent tech strategy as a company? And are our CIOs even getting together to talk about how they address this issue? I don't know. There's a lot that could be done.
Yeah. Well, and more co-working spaces, more kind of looking at what Waukesha County Technical College and some of the technical colleges are doing to really drive the talent growth and get people that maybe aren't going to the four-year degrees to get two-year degrees in technology in manufacturing, I think is really important too.
I just think, I mean, this obviously has been a huge conversation for years in our city and other cities like ours, right? Yeah. Like, this is not unique to Milwaukee, but it's a massive issue in terms of education is a huge part of it.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Steve Glenn. Andy Nelson joins us as well. The future of almost everything. The top 50 markets in the U.S. and Canada were ranked according to their competitive advantages and appeal to both employers and tech talent employees. Milwaukee ranking 49 out of 50 with two brilliant entrepreneurs in studio today. We're going to continue to talk about how Wisconsin and specifically the metropolitan Milwaukee area can continue to grow the entrepreneurial base. I mean, Andy, you just started your own firm. Yeah. Like, when you take that launch into the entrepreneurial world, there's a lot of decisions, a lot of economic decisions.
There is. You have to be a boss of a lot of things.
Yes. Yeah. So how did you go about searching for space and employees, and just kind of walk us through that process.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's, and I think it's a totally different world. If anyone wants to talk about it as an expert, I think they're lying, because we're in a different world post-pandemic. You know, what is office space when people have built, a lot of people have built these, I have a really great office at home, so it's difficult to leave that. What is missing, what we were talking about before we went on air, is that energy, that creativity, that talent. And so that's what I'm seeking in the city, where I feel like if I lived in New York, Chicago, or LA, that'd be easy.
You have other
to find.
Options. Yeah.
Yeah. It, here, yeah, there's a couple of.
Is that a basis of population, though? Is that a basis of the space and the investments those cities have made?
We have, yes, I think it is the investment. I think it's the right kind of investment, like the right kind of leaders making these spaces. It can't just be someone in real estate, right? Like there has to be
1,000% on that
inclusion with look at the space we're doing the show in today.
Right.
People for decades were trying to figure out what to do with Grand Avenue Mall, and all of a sudden there was the right people at the table to build something around community,
right?
Having people actually energy in the space. And then that has made this Third Street Market Hall a success.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not too dissimilar in being an entrepreneur and trying to find space and building out and attracting people here. That's what matters. At the end of the day, we're human beings that if we're going to get out of our houses and actually connect with people and build brands, build businesses. I think that is the missing piece, is that human element.
Yeah. Agreed. 1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah, were you going to say something?
I'm just going to say, and so where does that, it doesn't fall on the real estate developers, it falls on the business owners to create that type of environment?
So I know we've talked about this place before, but I mean, Jalem and Wantable are the perfect example. He built that space for entrepreneurs, being one himself. And it was not meant to be an isolated kind of get people in and out like a coffee shop or pack them in as closely as possible. It was, as Andy said, for community. It was to build a community in our neighborhood.
Yeah. And as we look at all these co-working spaces around Greater Milwaukee, a lot of businesses have available space. Mm-hmm. Creating similar models, especially in the downtown area, that invite everyone in, I think that's a winning scenario for both the workers at the business, but also for the entrepreneurs that need a third space to go to work.
That's exactly right. It can't feel like a hotel lobby.
No.
Walk in and 95% of these spaces, I'm like, why am I leaving my house? Because this is cleaner? Get out of here.
I know.
It needs more than that. It needs energy. And I think another huge piece to this, not to go down another rabbit hole, but to me, when I'm thinking about attracting talent here or keeping talent here, as I've had so many creative friends leave for Atlanta or Chicago or New York, is the huge thing we have here is our proximity to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And having a better connection, I know this isn't going to happen next year, but over the next 20 years, we really, really need to invest in better connection with Chicago.
Yep.
That's going to bring those large companies here, because that actually has a large, you know, the third largest city in the U.S. But also from a creative standpoint of just attracting that talent, people that I would want to work with, potential clients, wouldn't just be specific to my region here in Milwaukee. It would have to be a better connection to Chicago.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So in the U.S., solo dining reservations have risen by 29% over the last 2 years. I want to get your take on dining alone and what it means to the restaurant from an economic standpoint and to us as diners, because today is Down Out for Life. So Vivint Health will join us to talk about their second annual Dining Out for Life Milwaukee event. That is today for lunch and tonight for dinner. Margaret Lidstone, Vivint Health's Chief Philanthropy and Community Engagement Officer, will join us when we come back. This is the future of almost everything. Steve Glenn, Andy Nelson, and I'm Jeff Sherman. Welcome back to The Upswing. What do you think when you see somebody dining alone? Are you comfortable with it? In what ways does kind of that stigma surrounding solo dining kind of reflect?
There's a stigma?
I don't know. I mean, there used to be.
I respect it.
But now, totally on the rise, not only here in Metro Milwaukee, but across the country, up 18% in Germany, 14% in the United Kingdom, but 29% over the last 2 years. More people are dining solo. What does this mean for the restaurant industry?
Steve, you're hyped up about this.
I love it because it's my, like, I love dining alone, especially sitting at the bar and meeting the staff. It's my quiet time.
It's your serenity?
No one bothers me. They're all friendly. Quiet. I don't know what it means for restaurants. I mean, you got a bunch of scattered solo diners.
Yeah.
Well, so what?
Yeah. Okay. You got to retrofit the spaces. Maybe there's some expense there, but if people are still dining, they just want to do it solo because they want some time on their phone, or they want time to return emails, or they just want some serenity. That's okay. But if that's the changing habits, those are the changing habits we got to accommodate.
Yeah. Everyone is different.
Yeah.
You know, that not everyone is a massive extrovert, like, and people still want to go out and enjoy a great restaurant. And some people have different lives than the rest of us. So that's great. You know, like when I look at a restaurant experience as an awesome opportunity to bring people together and having that collaborative experience. But if people want to do that solo, that's great.
All right.
One thing I have noticed, Jeff.
Yes.
The solo diners, the tables turn faster than when you have multiple diners.
That's true. So and they get more people in and out.
I watch
the place.
You at the bar. It's
that's
a,
right.
Right. In and out, in and out, in and out.
All yeah. right.
It well, depends on the place, too. Like, if it yeah. was like an actual diner, I'll go up to that bar and like sit by yeah. myself. Like, that's cool. That's a cool experience. Meet somebody.
All right. I go on vacation by myself.
Yeah.
Very good. So today, one day only, local restaurants and bars that support LGBTQ plus community are donating a portion of their proceeds to Vivint Health to help Milwaukeeans living with HIV get the quality health care, the healthy food, and the social services they need to live their healthiest life. Margaret Lidstone from Vivint Health joins us. So, Margaret, I've been a part of a lot of Dining Week community events. You know, Downtown Dining Week, all communities seem to have them. Do these events, do they move the needle for you and the restaurants to kind of rally around a cause?
Yeah, absolutely they do. First, Milwaukee is such a wonderful philanthropic community. It's one of the reasons why I love to live here. So there is space and time for every cause. But, you know, I think what's really important is that the people we serve are some of the most marginalized in our communities. And so those restaurants and those bars stepping forward to host this evening for us is a hugely important signal in terms of bringing those people into the fold and understanding that the community knows they are here and that they have needs.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, when we come back, I want to get the full list of who's involved, how to get involved, and, hey, can I eat solo at these restaurants?
Yeah. No, bring all your friends. Bring all your friends.
All right. This is the future of almost everything. Steve Glenn, Andy Nelson, I'm Jeff Sherman. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Upswing. Let's give away a gift card to the Mineshaft restaurants in either beautiful downtown Hartford or just off of Highway 41 near the EAA in Oshkosh. Both locations are full of creativity and dining rooms to explore. That's why it's called the Mineshaft. Super affordable, ton of fun, really family friendly. Our kids love it. Your kids are going to love it. Your grandkids will love the world-class game room because it's quiet. It's convenient. The kids can go to the game room. You can sit in the dining area or sit at the bar. Kids 5 and under eat for free Monday through Thursday.
Ooh, wow.
From the kids menu, Steve. And every Thursday, when you buy one pizza, you get a second pizza. Say it with me, Steve and Andy.
For free.
Indeed. Caller number 6 at 855-616-1620 gets a gift card to the historic Mineshaft. So Vivint Health, the second annual Dining Out for Life Milwaukee event is today for lunch and this evening for dinner. All around, we have more than a dozen, like, what, 17, 18 locations, Margaret?
Exactly.
All right. So tell us about the spaces, how we can get involved, and what the restaurant owners and chefs are passionate about with this event.
So the restaurants you can go to include Amalinda, our dear friend Chef Greg there. They got the Pasta Tree. Bavette is open for lunch today. Flower Girl and Flame. Have dinner. Go out for a drink at La Cage or Fluid or a few other locations.
Very good. And each restaurant sets a percentage of its proceeds to be donated to Vivint Health, or how do you set that?
That's exactly how it works. So each restaurant will donate to us, and diners will have the opportunity to make a donation on site.
Okay, very good. So what's your biggest need as an organization, kind of beyond the monetary aspect of events like this?
So it's what I talked about earlier. It's that awareness raising. We have people in our community who are incredibly marginalized, who do not have access to the care that they need, and that is the care that Vivint provides. And so with awareness, we hope that more people walk through our doors.
All right. And when you look at kind of the big picture in terms of HIV and kind of the march towards a cure, what are some of the most promising developments out there and some of the ongoing research that we may not be aware of?
So there is research, there are preclinical trials on a cure, on a vaccine. HIV is a formidable virus, and they are a ways out. The great news is that with treatment, not only can individuals live long, healthy lives, that has a public health impact in that they can't transmit the virus. So we have a lot of tools right now to make a measurable impact across the country and the globe.
Yeah. And the food and pantry program as part of Vibrant Health. How, how has that been in kind of the last several months with just kind of, you know, economic times coming? Is the food still coming in from all sources?
So we've got a lot of food coming in. We have more food going out because times are hard. And so more and more people need our support with food. We're 1,500 shopping bags ahead right now of where we were this time last year. So we need support to bring more food in.
One thing that people don't think about with HIV is now that there is these medications and people are living longer lives. How old is your...
Our oldest living patient in the Milwaukee area, we just celebrated the 83rd birthday.
83rd. Nice. Yeah. So they're living longer lives, and they need these services. They need these wraparound services to kind of serve the whole person. So
we
that's
all
magic.
Need different types of help throughout our lives. So do people who are living with HIV.
Yeah. Very good. And if people want to get involved tonight, where can they go to get the full list of the restaurants?
Go to vivanthealth.org. And you will find the restaurants there. And just show up.
Get out in Milwaukee.
Show up, eat.
Dine out
and
HIV.
Spend money for a good cause and help our community
grow. And you can do it solo.
That's what we do on the upswing. Right. And that's what we should all do in our lives. Very good. The future of almost everything. Andy Nelson. Milwaukee Andy. I appreciate you taking time.
Thanks, Andy.
Of course. Happy to stop by.
Steve, have a wonderful day. Margaret, good luck with the event tonight.
You.